やめてたまるか。お前と俺は濡れたからさ、
一生かけた
一度の絆、心配するな、
最低だけど最高だって。ずっといつまでも、ずっといつまでも殴り合って、けなし合いて、たちがいるな。
Welcome everyone to a brand new episode of the DKP here at WrestlingObserver.com and F4WOnline.com. And I'm very excited here for today's show, because it's Super Bowl week. And yes, we don't talk American football a lot in this show. It's primarily a wrestling show, but I'm sure you all know I'm a big American football fan. And I wanted to do something this week to celebrate the fact that it's Super Bowl week. And I thought to myself, what could I do? And then I said, you know what I might try and do? I might try and contact 25-year veteran of subscribing to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, one of the hosts of Channel 4's NFL coverage, Sunday Night Football, and host of the America Carnage podcast, one of my absolute favorite people in the world. I'm honored to have on Mr. Mike Carlson. Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. I was going to do a Jesse Ventura. You're glad I'm there. happy to be there, but no, I'm doing really well. And the odd thing is that, as I think I said to you earlier, you know, my subscription to the Observer finally lapsed, and I haven't renewed it. So after 25 years, all of a sudden I'm an apostate Observer subscriber.
I'm always really intrigued by the Observer subscribers that have been around for so long, like since Dave's like really early days starting the newsletter.
Yeah.
25 years, you must have been getting in like right on the ground floor when he started the thing. And I'm so intrigued by that. But before we get into that, I kind of just want to know a bit about like the what got you into wrestling when you were a kid. What was like the wrestling, I assume, whether when you were a kid, you may have been older when you got into wrestling for all I know, but what was the kind of first wrestling you started watching?
Well, you know, the golden age of wrestling is 12, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's when me and my friends started watching on one of the local New York stations, and it was the old WWE, the Vince McMahon Sr. out of the Capitol Arena in Washington, and occasionally out of Madison Square Garden. But I don't think they showed the Madison Square Garden shows often in the New York area. And we watched wrestling, and we watched roller derby, which was at its heyday. At that time,
I swear, you and Dave Meltzer have parallel lives. I've taught this for so long.
Yeah, we're talking about mid-60s, sort of. And you know, it was great. It was old-fashioned wrestling, but it was really well-booked. It was entertaining. We were smart fans instinctively, even at age 12. And, you know, there was just some great larger-than-life characters there. I wrote a piece for The Guardian newspaper a few years ago about why I love wrestling, and went back to this moment when this is an age where still my parents weren't allowed. Maybe I was 11. My parents weren't allowing me to watch The Untouchables on TV because they thought it was too violent. And they brought Dick the Bruiser in to feud with Bobo Brazil. And they keep, as they did, they kept them apart for weeks and weeks, but they would bring them out for interviews and after they'd done their squash matches. And Dick the Bruiser was talking about how Bobo Brazil's cocoa butt couldn't hurt him, and took out a beer can, and these were the days when beer cans were made out of steel, not aluminum, and smashed it against his forehead and crushed the beer can. And then Bobo Brazil came out, and the crowd went crazy. And Dick the Bruiser was saying, "Give me the cocoa butt," and Bobo was saying, "You know, no, I couldn't do that." And finally, of course, he gives Dick the Bruiser the cocoa butt, and the Bruiser goes down pole-axed and gets up, having slashed himself and bleeding out. You know, and I just thought, you know, this is better than The Untouchables.
Yeah, see, it's amazing the way blood seems to draw in so many young wrestling fans. For me, it was the Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty through the barbershop window, and the Macho Man snake bite. I think the Macho Man snake bite was the one I saw first.
He was
bleeding out of his arm, and I couldn't believe it.
One of the things about wrestling is that the more bizarre the angle, the more absurd, the more I liked it. So you know, the surgically altered Dave Hebner making it, you know, that's absolutely perfect. And my favorite wrestlers in those days were, well, the face was Argentina Apollo, who was just too nice to, but there was a heel tag team of Handsome Johnny Baron and the Magnificent Maurice, and they came in, and they were, you know, like most of the wrestlers, they were wearing black trunks and a bit overweight, and, but Magnificent Maurice would have a top hat and a monocle, as I remember, and Handsome Johnny, a beret. And Handsome Johnny would have the top hat and the monocle, and Magnificent Maurice would do the Gorgeous George thing with the flit gun, spraying perfume on the crowd. And, you know, it was fantastic.
You, of course, played college football. You were a tight end, but you moved to the UK. It was back in 77, according to Wikipedia. So
yeah, they're right for once.
Yeah, and so you found out about the Observer while living in the UK. Then I take it.
Yeah, you're breaking up. I'm losing.
Oh, sorry, Mike. Can you hear me there?
Yeah.
Okay, I was just saying that were you in the UK then when you found out about the Observer? Because I'm surprised the Observer kind of had that penetration at that stage.
No, it didn't. What happened was I was working for ABC Sports, and sometime in the early 80s, I was in Budapest for a Congress of Sports Federations, and at ABC then, there was a guy called Peter Diamond, who was the Olympic expert. And he then went to NBC and handled the Olympics for them. And he was sort of the expert on all things Olympic. And I think I came down to breakfast. And at breakfast, he was reading The Observer. Or else we maybe talked about wrestling. And then he said, oh, you'd like this. And he brought a copy of The Observer. And I had basically not paid much attention to wrestling, you know, for a long time, but I'd started to see a bit of it on TV in Britain, and my interest, you know, we had talked about it a bit. And then when I read The Observer, I just thought, you know, this was great because A, it took it seriously, and B, Dave put together, you know, a very good product, you know, especially given the circumstance. So I subscribed for all that time by mail. So it always was arriving, you know, relatively late, in terms of what had actually happened. But, you know, read it religiously. And what was happening lately was just I was so busy that the issues would start to pile up unread. And
I know the feeling.
Get on the train and go through two or three. And then I realized I wasn't really familiar with most of the people that were being talked about because I really don't see much of it now. Without having Sky TV here, you know, I'm sort of at a loss. So I don't, you know, I look at it a bit just to keep up. But mostly what I was reading would be the obits and the history pieces and things like that. And then I'm thinking, well, I already know this stuff basically.
Well, I would be watching the show back when you were doing it with Nat Coombs a couple of years ago, and I used to, I think the first time I heard you drop in like a wrestling reference, I was like, oh my god, a wrestling reference here on Sunday Night Football. I just wasn't expecting it. And then you dropped in a few more. I was like, oh, this guy, a bit of a wrestling fan. And then it was just one day I happened to be reading like a 1992 or 1991 back issue that Dave puts up on the site. And in the reader section, there was a message from Mike Carlson. And someone then posted in a thread on the forum, that's the Mike Carlson from NFL. I was like, holy shit, wow. So, I was like, this guy is clearly a really big fan. And when you were writing into Dave those days, like, would you have had much interaction with Dave as far as, like, was he?
Not really. You know, I'm trying to think of what, once I actually won one of his competitions, which was to sort of guess the gate at, I can't remember what the event was, but it was in L.A. It was at, I think it was at the sports arena in L.A. Yeah, and, you know, I came pretty close to guessing the gate. But he stopped doing those competitions. I don't think he likes giving away free subscriptions. But, you know, occasionally he would, especially when it was concerning football players who wrestled, I'd have a little bit of information about some of them. Guys like Bob Sapp, you know, who tried out for NFL Europe and didn't make it. But I knew the line coach who cut him and, you know, got a pretty good scouting report on him.
Oh, wow. That leads into a natural question. Favorite NFL or favorite football personality to ever have a presence in pro wrestling?
Well, the ones I saw, I think it was Ernie Ladd. I did a piece for somebody, and I can't think of for who right offhand. I think it was for Cold Hard Football Facts about the, you know, the 10 greatest wrestling football players. And there's quite a few. Leo Nomolini is usually, you know, close to the top, of the lists. But Ernie Ladd, I think, was my favorite because he was such a good heel. And I always thought Kevin Green would have made
a great wrestler. I was gonna ask if you'd seen much of him in WCW, because
yeah.
to me,
no, he looked like a natural.
Yeah, he was just natural in terms of being a wrestling personality. And then when he got in the ring, he was actually, for a guy with such little experience in training, he actually held his own. He was pretty decent. So I think that was definitely his other calling in life. What about Mongo McMichael? Did you see much of Mongo? What were your thoughts on him and what he did?
Yeah, that was when I was watching. You know, when WCW was on somewhere in Britain, and I was watching it pretty regularly. Never really impressed me much as a wrestler or indeed as a performer, yeah, which was kind of disappointing. But they didn't handle him like most people. they didn't handle him very well, you know, and seemed to use him in the wrong ways. It also gets very boring to watch ex-football players always have to use a shoulder block, and, you know.
he pretty much just got to the point on his way out there where he kind of made way for Goldberg. He put Goldberg over, and Goldberg was probably a football player who they did use, right?
Bill Goldberg played in what became NFL Europe when it was called the World League.
Oh, really? I never knew that.
He played for the Sacramento, I want to say Surge, but I might be getting my leagues confused. And his coach was the guy who coached the Scottish Claymores, Jim Kreiner. And Jim said he was a pretty good football player. He was just a little bit below NFL standards, a bit undersized as well. But, amazed that he became a multimillionaire wrestling.
Now, wrestling, obviously, like from when you got into it as a fan for the first time, and then kind of through the 80s and into the 90s, it went through a lot of changes and a lot of different eras. And, like, were you the type to kind of go with the flow and you saw, like, the Attitude Era and stuff came in and you were able to enjoy that stuff? Or were you more kind of the traditionalist type fan that it was just wasn't the same for you as it was back in the day?
No, I think when I actually got interested, and for a while I was actually buying a lot of tapes, you know, from having tapes sent over from the States. And this was, I suppose, early 90s. And the mix was absolutely great. The absurdities of U.S. Wrestling Association from Memphis.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Corey Macklin screaming about the moon dogs and things like that, which that's the kind of absurdity I really like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
Jerry Lawler being king of Memphis.
And then, yeah, Jerry Lawler was always there, and Bill Dundee was about 4'2", you know, scaring bigger guys. And actually, Mike Awesome was – no. Was Mike Awesome
I don't think
that?
Mike Awesome was did
no.
Memphis. I,
trying to think of who the guy – there was a guy who should have been – really good, who was in that, who looked like, had the same kind of body type as Mike Awesome and all. I can't recall his name offhand. But, you know, and then Jim Cornette started Smoky Mountain, and ECW came along, which was absolutely fantastic when it started. And, you know, there were lots of great wrestlers in WCW. The WWF had a number of really good performers and wasn't quite as sort of over the top as it is now. And, you know, so there was a lot of competition, a lot to keep up with. The Japanese women were phenomenal. And I used to show tapes of, you know, Manami Toyota to people who didn't appreciate wrestling and you know, just to sort of show them, you know, what the event was capable of doing.
That's crazy, Mike. If you get a Manami Toyota reference onto a Channel 4, that will just be the greatest thing ever.
She's one of my all-time favorites. You know, absolutely fantastic performer.
Yeah, well, you're definitely, truly one of the best. And I don't know if you heard, but she wrestled a couple of times last year for Chikara, an indie promotion in the U.S., which really embraces kind of the foreign wrestling. She came over for them, and she wrestled both men and women and looked absolutely outstanding. Like, she looked like she had hardly missed a beat from her prime. And this is, in her 40s now, and it was amazing.
Yeah, and you definitely wouldn't expect that from a Japanese, a Japanese woman who wasn't a monster heel.
Yeah.
To get to her 40s and still be able to do the kind of stuff she was
absolutely
doing.
But ECW, you took to that a bit, did you?
Oh, yeah, a lot. Yeah. No, I thought that, for a time that was just, an incredibly well-booked and presented operation, although on a shoestring. And, although I have to say probably my favorite moment was J.T. Smith being one of the full-blooded Italians. as I say, the absurdities are really the things I like best. But yeah, that was when Paul E was sort of, I think, at his creative best, and they were doing things that no one else would do. And you can really argue that an awful lot of what's come since, still depends on that sort of template that they set at the time. It certainly was punched well above its weight for being an influential promotion.
Yeah, absolutely. But now, Mike, as mentioned, it's Super Bowl week, so I want to turn the discussion over to football a little bit. I will let you know, in the interest of full disclosure, I am a New England Patriots fan, so please try and be kind with your analysis of the upcoming game. Don't say anything that's going to scare me too much, like talking about Jason Pierre-Paul's freakishly long arms or anything like that. So, thoughts on the game and kind of how you're seeing it play out a couple of days away.
Well, the funny thing is, the last time the two teams met, which was the first year we did the Super Bowl on BBC, I was doing it with Rod Woodson. Rod picked the Giants. I picked the Patriots. And I did it with a certain amount of confidence. Although watching the teams before the game, I thought the Giants looked more ready to play for some odd reason. And sometimes those gut feelings really come in. This year, I'm probably going to pick the Patriots again, but I actually have much less confidence in the pick. Although I wouldn't be surprised if on the day, if I were out there, which I won't be because I'll be in the BBC studio in Manchester.
With Danny Amendola, I believe.
With Danny Amendola from the Rams, yeah, and Mark Chapman from the BBC. I wouldn't be surprised if it turned out that the Patriots came out more ready to play than the Giants. Although one thing with Tom Coughlin's teams is that they're usually, pretty much focused and on the game. And I like this Patriots team in some ways, but what scares me about the game from a Patriots point of view is that their weaknesses play into the Giants' strengths. In terms of matchups, the Giants really seem to me have the advantage in a lot of the key matchups, which means for the Patriots to win, they're going to really have to get a good performance out of Tom Brady, a much better one than, say, last 2 weeks ago against the Ravens or the last time the two teams met. Because when he's just a little bit off, their whole offense gets out of sync. And the other thing that worries me, of course, is if Gronkowski's ankle is as bad as I would suspect it is, that changes their offense as well. And I don't think they really have a way of filling that gap.
And I just wanted to go back to one thing you mentioned there. You said you did the Super Bowl a couple of years ago at Rod Woodson. He's one of my...
The first 2 years that we did it for the BBC, we did it from the stadium. We went on site.
He's one of my
and we got Rod. Yeah, Rod's great. I mean, fantastic player and a very good analyst. And what really impressed me was that he instinctively pitched his analysis, at the right level for the audience, for a BBC audience, so that it wasn't full of technical terminology. But at the same time, it wasn't dumbed down for the audience, and he's really and also a real pleasure to work with.
Yeah, I've always got the impression from him. Like I watch a lot of NFL Total Access and stuff like that, where you see kind of all the talking heads and stuff like that they put out. And a lot of them I find quite grating, and they kind of say what they think people want to hear, stuff like that. And Rod Woodson, I've just always found to be just a really legitimate, you can tell he believes what he's saying, and he just seems like I don't know if you saw his Hall of Fame speech, but like it was just wow. Like,
oh yeah, I was there.
Where are you? Wow.
That was the second year. That was in Tampa. The second one we did. And when I was at the press conference, when they announced who they were, and Rod, I think, was the first person to show up, the first person of the people who had been selected. And I was out in the hallway as he came in. And I said, I said, congratulations, it's going to help our show a lot. We've got a Hall of Famer. And the first thing he said was, I'm really sad Dermonti didn't go in with me, which was Dermonti Dawson, his teammate on the Steelers. And I just thought that was so
classy, yeah.
Typical of him, that his first thought was a gracious one. And I agreed also that Dermonti Dawson ought to be in the Hall of Fame, and I really hope he goes in this year.
Now, getting back to the game a little bit, you mentioned Gronkowski and his ankle and being a bit worried about that. What did you think of his dad coming out this week and kind of spilling the beans on that and kind of yeah. putting them in a bad spot?
It's not so much what I think. It's probably what Bill Belichick thought.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't know it was a high ankle sprain, you would think, maybe he could be close to 100%. But if it is a high ankle sprain, unless they've got some kind of medical techniques that I don't know about, you can kill the pain, but he's not going to be able to really cut off it very well, after 2 weeks. And without that ability, if the Giants don't have to adjust their defense to account for that, it's going to be a real problem for the Patriots. Yeah, as we saw when he was out for that time during the Ravens. Plus, he's a blocker. If you go back and look at the touchdown run that Ben Jarvis Green Ellis had in the game against the Ravens, the two blocks that are really outstanding are Solder comes down and takes Ray Lewis out one-on-one, and Gronkowski seals off Nada one-on-one. And and he's giving away a good, 60, 70 pounds.
Nada could be a monster heel in wrestling.
Yeah, he's a beast. And it's just a great job of blocking as well. And if you don't have one ankle, it's going to be hard to do that. At the same time, the good news, at least on that front, is if they get Vollmer back, they could conceivably use Solder in some tight end situations as a blocker. But it also would telegraph what they're going to do.
How do you see the Patriots? Offensive line being able to deal with the Giants and their rushing four that they're so good at, probably the best in the league at rushing four and leaving everyone else
back.
Yeah,
I mean that's really the key to the Giants is that they can do that. And it was the key 4 years ago. One of the things that they did was, at least from what I saw, they realized that what Brady liked to do was simply step up in the pocket. Not go one side or the other, just take a couple of steps forward and evade the rush that way. And if you watch the way they rush, they really do seem to try to be pinching in and closing off that middle alley. And a couple of times they get hands on Brady. And the effect of that was that Brady seemed to be feeling pressure before it came in the second half of the game. They didn't really get the sacks they did in the first half, but he wasn't as efficient as he had been until sort of the last few minutes of the game, and that's the time when everybody forgets what's been happening before and in these games. That's why the fourth quarters get so many more points than the three quarters that preceded them. But their four now is probably better with Pierre Paul there than it was at that point, and they can always move Kiwanuka up as well, and they're going to be they're going to present a problem in terms of speed. But having said that, I think this line is probably better than the line was 4 years ago. Sorry,
it's all kicking off, and Mike says,
"Yeah, my
JT Smith just took a bump."
But that line had Kaxer at right tackle, and Steve Neal was injured in that game, and Russ Hochstein was playing right guard. And I think they're better at both those positions now. Although Solder's going to be tested, as a rookie by who's ever on him. But the Giants like to rush the inside, you know. So it's really the guards who come under the most pressure, and I think they'll really pressure that left side of the line.
Shame we don't have Stephen Neal in there anymore, the man who beat the only man to beat Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, I mean, you know, great call. And, personal thing that the first college wrestler that I talked to about playing football, and it was Leroy Glover, who played at Barcelona and then went on to have a really good NFL career with the Saints. And I think he went to the Rams or somebody after that. You know, but Glover was talking all about the leverage that you get and how you learn that in wrestling. And he was a defensive tackle. But, you know, it's pretty applicable. And there's been a lot of guys. Curly Culp was a great wrestler, and he was a very similar kind of defensive tackle. And I think, you know, there is a sort of transition that could be made there.
Dr. Death Steve often. Williams.
Yeah, good. Although, I'm trying to think of, no, he never had a pro career.
Oh, no. I think he came close. I read Dave's biography of him when he got into the Hall of Fame. I think there's, like, he could have got close, but, different things got in the way. But, Mike, I just wanted to move aside from the actual game itself and talk a bit about your punditry, especially this past year, because I was immensely entertained by your duo on Channel 4 with Danny Kelly, a guy who started on the coverage just this year, and the first couple of weeks I was a bit unsure about him. I wasn't sure if he was the man for the role, but very soon you guys just clicked so well. You could tell he was really making an effort to really try and understand the game and become more knowledgeable on that. How did you find working with him this year?
Danny really likes the game, you know, and he's a very quick study, as he sort of has to be, doing his radio show. It's always difficult adjusting year in and year out, because I seem to go through most at a very prodigious rate. Many of them go on to great things after they've worked with me, which, you know, Colin Murray and Jake Humphreys and are big stars at the BBC now. And Nat's been on ESPN. The thing with Danny is he's a radio host, so he's used to controlling the conversation. And what I like best is when it kind of goes freeform, which is what Colin and Nat were very good at doing.
Yeah, okay. Sometimes Danny's always trying to reel you in a little bit. It's always
And you know, at times it would be like we would get emails in, and Danny would be content to sort of give a shout out to the people. Whereas what I'd love to do is deal with the emails, especially with no warning. So you have to do it off the top of your head. And it was just a question of the two of us relaxing with each other, really. And I think the show that actually put us over the top in terms of entertainment was when we had Zach.
That was the next one I was going to ask you about.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, I think the light switched on. Was, you know, the more relaxed and a bit off the wall you could be, the better the show was. And the hard thing is doing that and still doing the game justice. And, you know, that can sometimes, for some people, that can be difficult. But Danny didn't have any problem with that. You know, Zach certainly didn't. And I hope I never have, you know. So that's ideally what we get to do at late night. And because it's late night, nobody, you know, we're not going to put on ties and stuff like they do at Sky and try to pretend to be the NFL Network.
So
let's
tell this story. Zach Fallah, a guy who played for the Detroit Lions a couple of years ago, and unfortunately his career was ended by injury. He comes in, he does some punditry at you guys, and he's really relaxed, and he's got this hilarious hat on, and it's a real good time. And then he gets over so much that Sky bring him in the following week to do their games, and his hat is getting a lot of talk on Twitter and all this, and Sky tell him that he can't wear his hat. So he's there in a suit and tie, and he goes for the Dickie Bow approach, and you guys on your show that night poked a bit of fun at the whole situation, and I thought that was really great.
We were hoping to get him back, but Sky basically made him an offer he couldn't refuse, which was to pay him. I think he'd come in on our show at first as a sort of guest of the NFL, And then Sky made him his offer. So he did it, and more power to him. And I thought he was okay on Sky's show, but obviously there simply isn't the time or the format, to be able to have the fun that we did. And as you said, I think he was sort of wasted on that. But he's really good value. I'd love to have him back and do more. And there's more. The funny thing is, there's more room for three people on our show than there is on Sky because we have more time to talk.
Yeah, not as many ad breaks.
Fewer commercials and far fewer promos than Sky Run, and it's and the atmosphere is just a bit more relaxed as well too. So hopefully we'll get him back on the side. The other guy I'd love to have who was doing Skies and was a great fit for them was Rocky Boyman.
Yeah, he was really good.
And he's doing Radio 5 from the Super Bowl. He's joined their booth for that, and he was very good too. A natural, basically.
Mike, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on here and talking all this stuff with you. Maybe someday down the line we'll be able to do it again. But before you go, I want to give you the opportunity to plug everything you have got going on. I've listened to the America Carnage podcast. It's absolutely brilliant. And tell people about that and where they can check it out.
Well, yeah, that's Nat Coombs and myself and a third guy called Dan Lowe, who's a comedian and writer and TV producer. Who was a friend of Nat. So basically I'm sort of the father figure on the show. But it's a free flowing podcast about the four big American sports mostly, and some popular culture in American and very irreverent. You can go to americarnage.co.uk and listen to it. I just put up a blog actually, a blog post about the kickers in the NFL, which you might enjoy as well. I've got my own blog site, which is called Irresistible Targets, which is very pretentious and tends to be a bit literary and about films and about things that I have published in various places.
You're a man of broad interests, aren't you?
and kind of a jack of all trades and master of none in some ways.
I don't know about that.
when I was playing college football, which was at the Division III level, which gave you a certain amount of flexibility. I had to miss a practice to do a poetry reading at Trinity College, which was a nearby school.
Trinity
in Connecticut.
Because the biggest colleges here.
Not Trinity in Dublin. although I would have loved it. And our offensive coordinator started calling me the Poet Lariat. of the team, which did me a whole lot of good, but it was the football people had fewer problems with my writing poetry than the poetry people had with my playing football, and I find the same thing has gone on now. I did a piece a few years ago for the TLS, and when they asked me for the bio, I said, well, you could say I present American football on Channel 5, which is what I was doing at the time, or you could say I've written three books about film directors. And they said, I think we'll do the film directors, which didn't surprise me much at all. But, as you said, I'll be doing the BBC's Super Bowl Sunday on BBC One at 10:55, which is great. And, give my best to Dave. He's got all my admiration. And if he wanted to send me a free subscription, I'd be happy to keep plugging him on.
I will try and twist Dave's arm to do that. Mike, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks very much.
Good luck with everything this weekend. I hope the game is great, and I hope everything goes great with you guys hosting it. So, thanks again. Hello, Mike?
Or what?
Sorry, we lost you there. What was that?
Oh, I said you never even asked me who my favorite wrestler was.
Oh, well, who was your favorite wrestler, sir?
Terry Funk.
Terry Funk. That's a choice that cannot be disputed, I don't think.
I know. It's so easy to make, and he sort of does it on all levels.
He's like one of the only, I can count on my hand probably, only five people who in the history of wrestling just have no critics, and there's no one who's like, because with the internet you get people who will start the trend of hating pretty much everyone, and Terry Funk is one of those only guys who just seems to have utmost respect and praise for absolutely everyone.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and always performs no matter what the setting is.
Absolutely, like you did,
kind of like what I'd like to do.
Great stuff, Mike. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks again.
All right, bye. Hey, everybody. It's Alan back on the show here. And in case you couldn't tell during the course of that interview, I was having the time of my life talking to Mike Carlson. It was an absolute pleasure having him on. I can honestly say that was one of my most favorite interviews I've done on the show ever. It was such a privilege. It was right up there with like the first interview with Steen for me as far as just having fun talking to someone. That guy is just, I mentioned how he is parallelized with Dave Meltzer. He is like the Dave Meltzer in terms of just like knowledge when it comes to football. And you can tell from listening, he has that same thing almost for wrestling. And it was just great to talk to a guy like that who's so passionate about all the stuff he does and so knowledgeable. And that was an interview I think it was last year around Super Bowl time. I kind of had the idea of maybe approaching him for that, and I couldn't get in touch with him. And of course, this year with things like Twitter, it being so easy to contact people, I reached out to Mike and he responded, and we set this thing up. And it went really, really well as far as from my perspective anyway. I enjoyed that a great deal. And hopefully, as I said to him, hopefully we'll be able to have him back on sometime. And it's Super Bowl week, so as I mentioned on the show, for anyone who doesn't know, I'm a Patriots fan, so I'm actually starting to get a little bit nervous about the game now. With the 2-week break, like when the conference championships ended, I was kind of like, okay, great, we're in the Super Bowl. And I kind of chilled out and was like, there wasn't much happening about it last week. And I was like, yeah, Super Bowl's next weekend. It's going to be great. And now as we kind of come close to Super Bowl weekend, I'm getting, oh God, the Giants front four rushing scared. Hakeem Nicks scared. Victor Cruz scared. So, I'm scared of a lot of things on the Giants team. So, hopefully the Patriots, for my sake, will be able to deal with them, and then Tom Brady and the guys will do the job. Because as I explained to someone in work this week, when the Patriots won their last couple of Super Bowls, 04, 05, I was only sort of starting to become, I had been an NFL sort of fan for a few years at that point, but I hadn't become like really invested in it. And I was kind of like, oh yay, the team I follow are winning. Ooh, isn't this cool? And then somewhere around 07, I really became just a huge, huge fan. And like the Patriots kind of surpassed Newcastle in my life as the sporting team that I was really invested in. And when they got to the Super Bowl with the Giants, I was gutted when they lost. I was really, really just amped for them to win that game, and they couldn't do it, and it was so, so disappointing. And the last couple of years, every time they get knocked out, I'm always disappointed. So getting the Patriots back in the Super Bowl, I'm really hoping they can pull this one off. So the reason I'm doing this segment here on By My Lonesome is because this is a free show here at WrestlingObserver.com and F4WOnline.com, and thus I want to kind of do all the usual free show plugs and whatnot. So if yours is your first time kind of checking out something from the site, we feel free to peruse around the site, look at all the different things that are on offer. We've got lots of different radio shows, of course the marquee radio shows of the site, so Wrestling Observer Radios with Brian and Dave Meltzer. We've got the Figure Four Dailies where Brian interviews various people from the world of wrestling. Brian and Vinny Show, the ultra popular Brian and Vinny Show, and other non-Brian Alvarez content. Five Star Radio with Mike Coughlin, the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, talking Japanese wrestling, even some hockey. Carl Stern's History of Wrestling podcasts. Tough Talk, I think, still might be around. So lots of great stuff from an audio perspective. And of course, you've got the Wrestling Observer newsletter, which can't get any more of a plug from the fact that the great Mike Carlson subscribed by hard copy for 25 years. So if it's good enough for him, goddammit, it's good enough for you. So the Wrestling Observer newsletter and Figure Four Weekly, which I will especially plug because I am now writing in Figure Four Weekly, as I have been for about a month or two, talking the Japanese news of the week. And I know Mike Falcone, also a regular on this show. He does this kind of indie US indie stuff for Figure Four. And Brian does his usual stuff as well. So check that out. And lots of other, the message board, of course, with my very own Alan 4L. Pro S Paradise, which is the haven on the figure four board, free of the just absolute craziness that kind of dictates other parts of the board, where you can just kind of, you can go into the Pro S Paradise and chill out, talk about some good wrestling. That's kind of what we like to do there. And of course, with that, I have to plug the DKP and Pro S Paradise 2011 year-end annual. Dean Knickerbocker, our regular guest here on for the Alan and Dean Pro Wrest Viewing Machine, I'm getting so much credit for that thing, but I can't claim to take even 1/100th of the credit that I've been getting, because it's 99% Dean. He was the driving force behind that thing. He put in hours upon hours getting that done, getting that completed. He was just an absolute saint doing all that, and I really appreciate it, and I'm really glad to see the reception and the positive feedback it's gotten, because it's the least it deserves. And you can get that on the it was on the main page of the site. I posted it up there a few weeks ago. I don't know where it kind of goes as far as archives, but I've posted the link around on the board, so there's threads on the board that if you're in there, you can find it. And if you're a non-member, there is it's up on like all the usual media sharing things, which most of which are gone now, although adding file servers back, so that link should work. There's a MediaFire link, there's a rapid share link, there is a hot file link, I'm pretty sure. So yeah, if you can't find any of them around, I plugged it in a lot of places, so if you follow me on Twitter or anything like that, you should have seen links around for it. If not, and you still can't find it and you want to read it, give me a shout and I will guide you to where you need to go. At Alan4L on Twitter is the best place to reach me. Of course, we have the DKB Facebook page as well. Check that out. I'm getting good at these plugs, am I, guys? And then last but very much not least, I want to plug the work that I do in Fighting Spirit magazine. Fighting Spirit is just such a great outlet for me to write about wrestling and somewhere where it really does get a lot of eyeballs, and I really do appreciate that. And Brian Elliott from Fighting Spirit, an absolute gent, a gentleman and a scholar, putting together a great magazine. It's been, I think, under Brian's leadership now for over a year, and he's done a hell of a job, brought in a load of really good writers. You've got just stories from every top and bottom of the wrestling world, every corner covered, all the mainstream WWE TNA stuff. You got loads of UFC MMA stuff if you're into that. And then, yeah, I like to try and, with my articles, bring a bit of US indie Japanese flavor to things. So, yeah. And next month, and I'll plug this month in a minute, but next month I think will be a very Alan heavy edition of FSM, so people can look forward to that if they somehow are of a screw loose and enjoy my writing. But yeah, this month's issue with Chris Jericho on the cover, it's out in newsstands, has been for about a week or so, I think. And yeah, it's WH Smiths and Eason's in the UK and Ireland, fightingspiritmagazine.co.uk if you want to go check out the website and see kind of what they have to offer there, and a iTunes and Pocket Mags for the iPhone and iPad if you are living in the 2012 digital age and can't be doing with hard copies of things and want it on your snazzy phone that I most certainly do not have. Yeah, that's the way to go. So yeah, you can get anywhere in the world by those means. So check out Fighting Spirit, as I mentioned, Jericho on the cover of issue 76, and it's a really good read. I've read through most of it. I really like John Lister's article on the history of battle royals, kind of in time for the Royal Rumble, and Todd Martin's in there with a really good article again this month, and lots of good stuff in Fighting Spirit, so please do check that out. And yeah, I suppose that's it for this week, guys. We'll be back, very quick turnaround. A show that I know a lot of people are looking forward to. Normally I don't kind of give away what shows are coming up, but since we have people listening maybe for the first time because it's a free show and a new audience maybe that might have come in to listen to the Mike Carlson interview, I will mention that this weekend it's going to be the first edition of Alan and Justin's Road to WrestleMania. Very successful series of shows for us last year. Myself and Justin Shapiro, we went into the the WrestleMania convertible, and we cruised down the highway playing all kinds of road music, and talked about everything that was going on in WWE leading up to WrestleMania. And we did about four or five shows last year, kind of going from Rumble to Mania, and people seemed to love them. So we're back to doing them again this year, and yes, we do have a third man in the car. We have found a way to squeeze him in. It is a two-seater convertible, but we've managed to find room for AMO version 1. Yes, the ever-popular AMO version 1, the man who's normally on the shows, the Just Aiming to Please shows, me and Justin Shapiro. He has said he is going to keep up with the WWE leading into WrestleMania, and he's going to join us for the Road to WrestleMania shows this year. And me, him, and Justin will be doing the first one of those this weekend, where we will talk the Royal Rumble, Raw, and everything else going on in WWE right now. So, I'll give a teaser. I don't think Justin's too happy. I think Justin may be bringing the not the hate, I don't want to say, but he's going to be bringing the grievances with recent goings on. So, that to look forward to. And everyone, thanks for listening. And thanks for, if you stuck around for all these plugs, thank you very much. I feel very loved right now if you did that. So thanks everyone, and check out the show on the site with me, Justin Amo, this weekend. Check out Fighting Spirit. Check out all the other stuff at F4W. Sign up. It's only $10.99 a month. You can afford it. Thanks everyone. See you soon. Bye.